The Retirement Conversation is a series of episodes on the changing nature of retirement today. These conversations are focused on the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition, including career, work, purpose, wellness, social relationships, and leisure pursuits. You'll hear from leading experts in the field. You'll hear the stories of people who have created interesting second acts. You'll find out about practical ideas and tips to create your own. Retirement Wisdom was co-founded by Joe Casey and Dennis Wussman, two former business executives turned professional coaches. At Retirement Wisdom, our mission is to save people from a boring retirement. We hope you enjoy the series and conversations.
Today's guest on the Retirement Conversation is Alan Castell. Alan is a professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of California in Los Angeles. He studies learning, memory, and aging, and is interested in how younger and older adults can selectively remember important information. He lectures internationally to people of all ages. Alan's work has been featured in the New York Times and Time magazine, and he has a new book entitled Better with Age: The Psychology of Successful Aging. Alan received his PhD from the University of Toronto, did a fellowship at Washington University in St. Louis, and has been on the faculty at UCLA since 2006. Alan, thanks for joining us today. Is there anything you'd like to add to your bio?
It's great to be here, and I think you covered everything. I mean, I, at the age of 42, am very interested in aging, partly because I have older grandparents, but also younger children. So that's kind of the rest of my life is spent looking at how we age and what there is to look forward to.
Well, thanks again. And Joe?
Alan, what are some of the most popular misconceptions about aging that you see?
I think people certainly have a lot of negative beliefs about aging, especially when we're younger. And the truth is, as we age, there are a lot of challenges and more aches and pains and even concerns about dementia. But when you look at healthy aging, people who age and are free of disease and disability, there's a lot of interesting things that can happen. And while most people think people are depressed when they're older or they hobble around or they can't take care of themselves, the truth is older adults, healthy older adults, often report greater happiness than younger people. And in fact, the happiness seems to reach its all-time low in midlife around age 45. So I think there's a lot of myth about what happens as we age, that college was the best time in your life and that when you're older, you won't be able to do the things you want to do. And so I really set out to look at this question when I looked at the research on aging, but also role models of aging. And I think we all think about aging in ways that are sometimes vague. But if you think of a specific person who illustrates, you know, what it means to age well, you might think of a grandparent or a friend or a professor or a teacher or a coach you had. And then you start to think of all the things that might actually change as we get older, blossom, even get better with age. So that was really the focus of this book, Better with Age, was to look at not really all that just get better, but what are the misconceptions that are out there so that as we age, we can prepare wisely for what to expect in older age.
Well, one thing's for certain, we're all getting older and we all want to stay sharp, but we seem to be looking for the silver bullet that'll help us do that. And you put out in your book that looking for a single solution is not necessarily the best approach. What should we do to stay sharp?
Well, you know, science has yet to deliver the single best thing you can do. And even when I talk to older adults, there's a variety of responses. Some people say crossword puzzles, but the truth is there's no really good evidence that crossword puzzles protect your brain from dementia. If you're good at crossword puzzles, that's great, and you should certainly continue doing them. But probably the best thing you can do are a collection of activities that provide balance for your brain and your body. And one activity that seems to really be supported by science is physical exercise and walking. In particular, it's something we can all do for the most part if we're healthy. It's free, and you can do it in a social setting as well. And a lot of research has shown that the part of the brain that's critical for memory, the hippocampus, it tends to decline in volume after the age of 50, so it really starts to shrink. But they found in groups that walk 3 or 4 times a week for 40 minutes, the hippocampus actually grows by 1% in the first year when this intervention of walking is introduced. So literally your brain is growing and getting better, and people do better on memory tests after this intervention of walking. And so it's a fairly simple approach, and it's an approach that might be counterintuitive, because typically we think if we want to keep our brain sharp, we should do brain activities like crossword puzzles or computer-based brain training. And as of yet, yet there's no really good evidence that shows that brain training of that sort, computer-based brain training, allows your brain to change in ways that allows you to remember the things that are important to you, like where you left your keys or the name of your grandchildren. And so it seems that walking is probably, if there is one thing that we can do, it seems that walking seems to be one of the best things, but it goes against some of our intuitions about kind of keeping the brain sharp by doing mental activity. Mental activity is certainly going to be good in a variety of forms, is really important, but physical exercise seems to be one thing that is critical.
You interviewed a number of fascinating people for your book, Better With Age, The Psychology of Successful Aging, confided that they feared retirement. What they saw in people who retired before they did really concerned them. And why did they fear retirement? Because it looks so great in all the brochures and the commercials. And what did you notice that they do differently than the ones who retired before they did?
I think we think of retirement as kind of a goal. We work for a long period of our life. We have a job that is challenging, perhaps. And once we reach a certain age, we really do want to turn a switch. But those life transitions can be very challenging. And as I'm sure you both know, sometimes we approach them focusing more on the financial aspect that we need to prepare for and not the psychological aspect. And retirement can be a challenge. It can be a challenge both for the person retiring, for their spouse, for their family around them, because you lose a lot of the structure you had in your life. Even the small talk you might have had in the workplace can almost protect you from loneliness. You can feel valued in your profession. And when you take all of that away, you know, just playing golf every day is not going to solve the need for stimulation, being around other people. And so when I talk to well-known older adults who achieved a lot of fame or spent a lot of their time committed to a job, they, in many ways, looked at retirement as something that might be bad for them. And everyone approaches retirement differently, but for example, the architect Frank Gehry, his work is really blossoming now, and he's doing amazing things. I don't think he wants to retire, but he's focusing on the projects that interest him the most, so he can be more selective. Maya Angelou, you know, shifted her career, spent more time writing, but also presenting and teaching. And so these people certainly didn't walk away from their profession. John Wooden, the famous basketball coach, on the other hand, did retire kind of at the top of his game at age 65, having won another national championship. But then he transitioned into consulting, working with others, doing a lot of public speaking. But even at age 95, when I spoke to him, he said he missed the game. He said he'd love to be involved in some way as a consultant, working with coaches. So we really, even though we might not think of our job as our identity, it can influence us in ways that we're not familiar with. And once we transition out of that, we're left with sometimes a big hole. And a lot of older adults might fear retirement for reasons that go beyond financial ones.
The aspect of the job always intrigues me is the people in your book. A lot of these people were like John Wooden, clearly was a very successful coach. A lot of these people were very creative, and it was part of their life to be continuously creative. Do you feel that that helps people successfully age, the fact that they had this runway in front of them, so to speak, where they've been kind of practicing this in the sense that they have a certain mindset and they just carry that with them?
Absolutely. Creativity is one of those things that can change as we get older, and we actually might be more creative as we get older, whether it's taking up a new hobby, playing a new musical instrument, or just approaching problems in ways that we hadn't thought of before. And I use this example in my book that the pilot who landed the plane on the Hudson River, he'd never landed a plane on a Hudson River before. And so he's forced to use a form of creativity that doesn't just get better with age because you've done it many times. He had to understand some of the principles that were involved, adapt very quickly, and then carry out something that no one had ever done before. And using prior experiences, none of which were exactly the same, he was able to do this. And I think as we get older, creativity can blossom and get better. And in many ways, our jobs provide that. We can look at questions and think of them in different ways. We can sometimes take on different jobs. A lot of people now retire and then take up a part-time job or a job that they're more interested in, or they serve as a consultant. And that can be very stimulating because now you're applying your knowledge set to a slightly different domain. And that use of creativity can be really rewarding.
As an aside, I happened to be standing on the shore waiting for a ferry that day, and I am very grateful for his creativity in landing. That was an amazing thing to see.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, he was an older pilot a few years from retirement. Mm-hmm. Typically, if you have an older doctor or an older pilot, you might think, oh, they have wisdom. Mm-hmm. But wisdom is very difficult to define what wisdom is. Wisdom usually involves prior knowledge of having done something many times. But I think what's interesting here is this was a rare event where you had to rely on creativity and coming up with a new way to solve a problem and taking risks. So I think those things, as we age, we might actually be better at forming creative links, seeing problems in different ways. And if we've had a job for a long time, shifting gears can actually, you know, lead to a lot of creativity.
It's interesting you mentioned John Wooden at 95 missed the game. What's the difference between what people who haven't retired yet say that they'll miss and what people who actually are retired say that they miss the most?
It's a great question, and I think people are excited to retire because they won't have the same 9-to-5 or the tasks that they dread doing. And oftentimes when people retire, they will say they do miss certain aspects of it, but now they can spend more time doing the things they love and less time the things they didn't like. But one thing people will miss often are the people, and even the small talk you had at the office or in the field or wherever you were doing, those small interactions protect you from loneliness, and that's something that can be a real issue when we retire or move or leave a social circle that we're very familiar with. And it's not something people typically expect, and it's not something people plan for, and it's almost a taboo topic because people often don't like to report that they feel lonely, even though in many settings we don't necessarily feel lonely, but we miss having a little bit of social interaction, sometimes mixed with the professional aspect, as opposed to just finding one or two people to talk to regularly. So I think that's what's interesting, is that some people approach retirement with a great level of excitement, and many people retire well and move and travel and spend more time with their grandchildren, take up new hobbies, and really enjoy retirement. But in many cases, people are surprised at what retirement, the challenges it also poses as well. And sometimes we have to overcome them. Sometimes we then move back into a job after a year or two, perhaps a different job, take on volunteering or a new role.
Is it a stretch to say that people who retire well have goals or retire forward thinking towards something versus away from something?
It's a great question. I think you need a little bit of both. You know, when you retire, you're going to be leaving behind a certain responsibility or job, but
sure.
You also need to think, what am I going to do in the future? And you can't just be vague about it. You can't say, I'm going to travel more, or I'm going to spend more time with my grandkids. You need to be specific, like how much more time and what sorts of activities do you want to do? Where do you want to go? And are you going to be able to afford it? And do you need to retire completely in order to achieve these goals? Many times people could work 50% or take on another job while still being able to do the things they want to retire. So taking on, you know, new responsibilities can sometimes be exciting, but limiting the responsibilities that one dislikes is kind of the key, and focusing on what really becomes important, whether it's family, whether it's travel, whether it's still pursuing professional goals, writing a book, writing poetry, taking on painting, gardening. There's a variety of things, but you really do need to have some clear goals as to how you'll spend your time. Otherwise, you might be surprised.
In your book, you mentioned the key to retirement is pursuing creativity and basically lowering commitments on things that you're not interested in any longer. And it goes back to that creativity thing you just talked about a little bit. Is that fair? Did I place that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really a form of selectivity. In your job, if you spend 8, 10, 12 hours a day doing something, you want to look back and say, what parts of it did I enjoy? What parts do I do because I have to do? And then when you retire, how can you focus on the things that you really enjoy? And some of it are creative pursuits, whether it's writing or painting or talking to people or sports, and then seeing if you can spend more time doing that. But you certainly don't want to spend all your time doing that. If you enjoy golf, you might not enjoy golfing every day or going twice a day. And you might miss some of the things that you thought weren't important to you, whether it's the social interaction or the sense of feeling valued. And so those sorts of things are important to consider. And I think we don't think of creativity, but creativity is something that really you can allow for it to creep into your life slowly, because oftentimes when you're working or when you have family obligations, you don't have time to pursue creative pursuits, whether it's reading or writing or gardening. Some of these things are kind of small activities that aren't going to result in major breakthroughs, but many times it leads to this level of peacefulness, which I think is important. As we age, people will say they want to stay busy. That is really an important thing, but you don't want to be busy just doing busy work. You want to be busy doing the things that you value, whether it's spending time with family or pursuing new avenues. And that's, I think, critical when you retire.
It's interesting you mentioned really how you want to spend or invest that time. Because most people, I find, associate retirement planning with finances, and we can all agree that's certainly important. But when it comes right down to it, as you're pointing out, retirement's about not only money, but also time. And why do you find that people under certain circumstances, including getting older, become more selective about how we invest our time?
Time is a precious resource, and we know that because we often use it as an excuse, and I've used it many times. I just don't have enough time to do this or to organize that or to, you know, fix this. We just don't have enough time. But the truth is we do have time for the things that are most important to us. And I think as we get older, we want to maximize the time spent doing the things that are important to us. It doesn't just mean seeking pleasure all the time, but it means allocating time for the things that we've wanted to do, the things that are important. Sometimes this might involve becoming more involved with family or being more connected to a religious organization, taking on a new hobby, returning to a sport or a musical instrument that you hadn't touched in a while. And we'd often use that excuse if we just didn't have enough time to read the books we wanted to read. And now when time might actually come back to us a little bit, we want to use that time wisely, because the truth is we might not always be thinking about it. Time is limited. And as we get older, we're even more aware of that. And so how we spend our time can be, especially after retirement, a real reward to us that we now have time for the things that we've always wanted to do. We might not do all of them, but it's just nice to know that now we have time to spend, you know, not be in a rush. And I think that's probably why rates of unhappiness might be highest in middle-aged people, especially now with the internet and access to social media. We always have something to keep ourselves busy, but the end result doesn't lead us to reward. And I think as we get older, we're more aware of what the busy work and what the work that actually will lead to something that's pleasurable or impactful.
And what role can engaging in something challenging play in successful aging?
It's really important that as we age, we develop habits, and these habits can protect us in many ways. We'll go to the local coffee shop. We'll have routines that we carry out. All of these things can be very helpful, because when we have routines, we don't need to spend much time thinking about what we're going to do. But we often fall into ruts as well, and as a result, we might not try new things. So this could be as simple as trying a new restaurant or going to a different grocery store. It can also involve being around new people, meeting new people, sometimes people who have a different perspective on life or politics. And although there's no research that shows your brain is getting better or growing when you challenge yourself in these ways, it does lead to a new perspective sometimes, or it can also allow you to interact with people you might not normally interact with. So sometimes it's this balance of doing the things you're good at and the things you have been doing, the habits that you've established, but also trying some new things, having some variety. And that's what John Wooden basically said as his three tips as we age, is stay busy, stay active, but also have some variety. And sometimes it's hard to build that into your life, but you might be given choices or opportunities as you get older to try something new. And sometimes it might be something you absolutely don't want to do. Maybe you don't want to go on a cruise. Maybe you don't want to travel to a country that is far away, different cultures. But there might be smaller things that you can try, whether it's even just a different ice cream flavor or playing a new game with a grandchild that you've never played before. That can be very stimulating. So sometimes it's the small things that can challenge you and lead to this appreciation.
I told Joe when I read your book that you had this phrase called adaptive flexibility that really resonated with me, because it talked about the flexibility is very important, it's very critical. My question related to that is, as you explain that, can you explain that in the context of routines for people and how that can help them? And is that a mindset for people?
Flexibility is important in terms of being adaptive. The world is always changing, and what worked 20 years ago might not work now, especially with computers and the internet and social media. There might be different ways to communicate with people. People work in different ways. On the other hand, a lot of our habits that we've built up are effective. You know, if you're 70, 80, 90, you must be doing something right. So it's not that you just need to be flexible and adaptive. You know, this is how I now need to do things, or this is how TVs work now, or this is how the internet works. But you might value some of the old things that you have been doing, but then you're flexible and interested in innovation. And I think innovation can take different forms, and older people are going to be critical for innovation, especially with the way the demographics are changing, that now a target audience for innovation is really going to be how we age well. And looking at the habits that older people have, but also the manner in which older adults might embrace creativity and flexibility, can really dictate how the world is going to work, whether it comes from self-driving cars that now reduce barriers for older adults to get around the city, to nutrition, or ways we interact with people who are far away. So I think flexibility is important, as is balance. We really want a little bit of our old habits, but also incorporating new things. And that's a theme that comes up in the book a lot, is that there's no one thing and there's no one way to eat. And if anything, as we get older, we realize and appreciate the need for balance, a balanced perspective, or physical balance especially. That's one thing that I learned a lot from this book, is that even though memory changes and we might have more memory challenges as we age, probably what's more important to focus on is physical balance. Because if we get out of bed and trip on something, we're going to suffer a fall. We might break our hip, result in hospitalization. Then we're not walking anymore. Our memory starts to decline. It's a big cascade. So if we can train balance so that we're more likely to stay on our feet, that's probably the most critical thing. And many people aren't aware of poor balance until they've had a fall. And I actually had to practice this myself, standing on one leg near a chair, and I could do it for maybe 5 to 10 seconds. But after that, I started to tip over. And so now I practice balance training while I brush my teeth in the morning. I balance on one leg for 1 minute, and then I switch and balance on the other leg for 1 minute. And this means I brush my teeth for 2 minutes at least, but it also gives me some feedback as to whether I can do it. And I notice some days I'm better at it than others, but I've really worked up to this level of having good balance in these sorts of situations. And balance training is, again, it's a simple thing. You don't need to go to a yoga class. You can, of course. There's many exercises that you can do, but there's very simple things. So I think things like when we talk about flexibility, it's important to see that there's things in life that you can do that are quite simple that can keep you on your feet. And balance, I think, is really important.
Great advice.
So you mentioned this paradox about habits, and I think it's a very, very important thing. They provide the structure, they can make life easier, as you mentioned, but on the other hand, they can also limit us from being open to new things. What advice would you have for people who want to be more balanced? What should people do?
Well, I think habits are really in place as a safeguard. They allow us to not think about things. We probably drive to work the same way every day. We often order the same foods at the same restaurants, and those are often good habits. But we also probably have some habits that we might not think of as very good, drinking too much alcohol or eating in ways that aren't necessarily healthy. Sometimes our sleep habits can get in the way of our health. So there's certainly things we would like to change, but habits do protect us. And I think sometimes, again, it's taking small steps. Maybe you go to the same restaurant, but you try something new, only to realize it wasn't as good as what you normally get. And then you realize, well, that's why I have those habits. You know, you've lived to a certain age and you focus on, you know, the things that are important and develop these habits that can be very useful. And I think even for family life, habits and family traditions become really important, like rituals, whether it's Thanksgiving dinners or holidays spent together. That really can build a family tradition that can be very enriching. And oftentimes children, as they grow up to adults and become grandparents, will recognize that there were important habits their family had, whether it was, you know, going on vacations together or just silly picnics that they used to always do at the same park. And these sorts of habits can be very important. And I think sometimes those habits can collide, especially when you mix different family members who might want to eat at different restaurants or eat at different times, or when you have grandchildren who are on different nap schedules than the rest of the family. And that's when things can be challenging. And that's when people will say, oh, you know, so-and-so is so fixed in their ways. They always want to do it the same way. Well, many ways that can be useful, but there are times where we need to be flexible or recognize that certain habits might not be the only way to do things. And, you know, nutrition is one thing. We might have eaten in one way for 20, 30 years only to see the trends change. Now there's many organic foods, or people question carbohydrate intake now, and you might think, well, I've always eaten this way. Why should I change? And so I think it's important to have this open perspective as to why or what could be effective, but also realize that many of the habits we have protect us, and those can be habits that are enriching for other people and very appealing in some ways. Some people are very detail-oriented. That can be a habit that gets ingrained because it's reinforced, because it's been helpful for a profession, but it might not be helpful when planning a family visit. So it really depends on how you view the use of habits, but I think what's interesting is as we age, some of these habits are very pronounced, but oftentimes it's very easy to change these habits if there's the right reinforcement, if there's a need to do it. And oftentimes people don't think of aging as a time to change habits, but it can be if needed.
It's funny you mentioned before trying new things, and you mentioned a couple of questions back, ice cream. try a different flavor of ice cream. Reminded me, the last time I was in your city, I was out to dinner with our 17-year-old son, our youngest child, and he ordered charcoal ice cream. And I had a physical reaction of, are you kidding me? That's the last thing I'd ever order. He said, Dad, you got to be open to new things. I said, all right, fine, I'll try it. Best ice cream I've ever had. It's my life's mission to get that again someday.
And it's memorable, too.
Yes.
I mean, even when you first said that, I thought this sounding like a terrible choice. I mean, it's not something I would do, but it's memorable. And even if it wasn't a good ice cream flavor, you would then say, you know what? I tried this ice cream named charcoal, and it was terrible. But it turned out to be good, and I think we learn from these experiences. And that's another thing, is it's important to still be able to make some mistakes as we get older. We just want those mistakes to be smaller ones. So if you choose the wrong ice cream flavor, that's fine, but you at least tried something new. And I think those sorts of choices can be important because they allow you to see other people's perspectives. They allow you to see what other people are now doing. You know, 20, 30 years ago, charcoal flavor probably didn't exist. So I think it's one of those small things that you can do that the risks are not as high. But that's really interesting. And I think that's important, especially when we embrace different cultures or as our children grow up, they're going to experience things in different ways than we did. And instead of simply saying, well, that's not the way I did it, say, wow, that's interesting. I'm curious how that's going to work.
And I'm curious, does wisdom come with age and how can we cultivate it?
It's a great question, and I think that's also one of those stereotypes about aging is that, well, with age comes wisdom, but we need to dig a little deeper as to what that wisdom is. And sometimes that's just knowledge and something we accumulate, but sometimes wisdom can also be emotional. You know, we have a gut feeling and we learn to trust it a little bit more as we get older. Sometimes it can involve emotional regulation, that you're better at biting your tongue or saying something that you feel that you might have not said 20, 30, 40 years ago. And I think wisdom is one of those things that we know it when we see it, but it's often hard to define. And it can often be attributed to aging simply because we've accumulated more experience. We've seen how the world works. But I again return to the pilot, Sully, who landed the plane on the Hudson River. And you could say, oh, well, that was because he was an older pilot and he had wisdom. But he'd never done that before. So you can't say wisdom is simply having done things many times. It's recognizing a situation and then applying some sort of solution that you think can work based on your experiences. But sometimes the experience is not going to be exactly what you've seen in the past, and we have to take risks. And I think wisdom kind of knows how things might play out. And sometimes you can have wisdom when you're 20 or 30 if you've been in a situation many times. But that's one of those things that might just coexist as we get older, that we've seen more things happen. And so we have a better idea of how things might work out, whether it's an emotional situation, whether it's, you know, a conflict, or we also know not to always be reactive, because sometimes the best wisdom is not to do something, and that can involve patience and the ability to kind of understand how other people might behave.
I think of Sully landing that plane, and when you were saying what you were saying, I totally get it. He didn't repeat it, except maybe in flight system simulators is the word I'm looking for. But he had the wisdom to remain, at least he's depicted that way, to remain calm and take an approach. And that's something that is that emotional side that you talked about. At least that's the connection that I'm making here, Alan. I think it's a real great one.
No, absolutely. We're going to be presented with more situations as we get older where we're going to have to respond, sometimes quickly. And what's interesting is speed of processing actually declines as we age. We get slower. You can't dispute that. Neurons fire less quickly. Our reaction times aren't as fast. But what can change is how we control ourselves. And some of that involves emotional regulation, so if you're placed in a highly stressful situation, and some of it involves how we compensate. And so a lot of stereotypes exist about older drivers, that they're not as good as younger drivers. But the truth is, statistically speaking, older drivers are less likely to get into severe car accidents relative to younger drivers. And the reasons are quite simple. Older drivers are less likely to take risks. They're less likely to talk on their cell phone while they drive. They're less likely to drive at night. They're more likely to drive in environments they're familiar with. So these are all things that older adults might be aware of, that I'm not going to, you know, take on risks or do things that could result in an accident. And whether that's wisdom or habit, these are the kinds of things that might keep us safer as we get older. And I think, you know, the extreme case here with Sully being able to calmly do something no one's done before is really important. And it's the kind of thing that involves both planning, but emotional regulation, and this concept that I touch on in the book of metacognition, of knowing how you think and knowing how other people will think. And that's very important because as we age, we notice changes in our own cognitive abilities and we want to then compensate for them. If you can't remember something, you might write it down. If you forget something, you might worry about it or you might say, that's okay, it'll come back to me. And if it's important, it does. And so how we observe our own behavior can really influence what we do. And sometimes this might be compensation. It might make us a safer driver, you know, because we don't respond as quickly as we used to.
Well, thank you. Lisa, I want to recommend that people read your book here and so they can continue to learn even more about that. But one last question for you. What advice or what top things would you offer to someone who wants to be better with age?
Well, at age 42, I don't know if I can give personal advice, but I do turn to older people, and that's kind of the focus of this book. I did a lot of interviews with older adults and also the research on the psychology of aging. And I think the famous basketball coach, John Wooden, told me the two most important things in life were love and balance. And he really meant find who and what you love and have balance in your life, both mentally and physically. And I think this can lead to a happy and healthy and hopefully long life. He lived to the age of 99. So he wasn't worried about his memory. His wife passed away well before he did, and he certainly missed her, but he found ways to surround himself with people he cared about. And he tried to find the balance that everyone looks for as we get older.
Great points and definitely great things to keep in mind. Alan, we're going to include a link to your book and also your TED Talk on our show notes, but how can people going forward best follow your work?
I think this book is really a collection of everything I've been working on in the last 10 or 15 years and case studies of successful aging, mentors and people who we can look up to. So a lot of the research and a lot of my story is captured in the book Better With Age. I also have a blog for Psychology Today and a TEDx talk. But I encourage people to read the book and reach out if they have insights, and it can make a great gift for other people as well because I think everyone's getting older. The book is not designed for people simply in their 70s or 80s. It's designed for people in their 30s, 40s, 50s who want to think about what can I do now so that I can enjoy a long life and what are my parents and grandparents experiencing and what can I do to help them. So the book Better With Age really attempts to get at the myths that surround aging and what we can do now so we can enjoy a long life.
Great. Thank you so much, Alan. We really appreciate you joining us today.
Great. It was great talking with you.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much.
That was a great conversation with Dr. Alan Castell. Dennis, what jumped out at you as some key things that you're taking away from the conversation?
Agree, a great conversation. First thing, I'll put these together. In my mind, three C's, creativity, curiosity, and commitment. And Alan mentioned the importance of creativity. Using prior experiences of being creative in your life can help you as you age. I thought that was important. Dialing up your curiosity as you age is also important. And balancing or managing your commitment to things, about things that you don't like doing versus things you like doing, were some key points that I think he was making. The second thing that I took away was he mentioned about the fact that as you age, people will make mistakes. You do make mistakes. You like to make less of them. We all like to make less of them every day. But you shouldn't be afraid to take certain risks. We saw the same thing in one of the podcasts we did with Melissa Davey when she was talking about taking a detour and trying something different. So Joe, your comments about the different ice cream, trying something different sometimes opens up different avenues. And if we don't try them and we don't go to that step or we take the opportunity to have that dinner with somebody that we normally wouldn't do it or eat something different or, you know, brush our teeth with our left hand instead of our right or our right hand versus with our left, we're not really giving ourselves a chance to learn and grow. The last thing was that Alan wrote the book for people who were younger. So again, the book Better With Age, Psychology of Successful Aging, he wrote it from the perspective of somebody who was younger. And he also wrote it for people that they can start earlier in life about looking about what successful aging is to help them grow and become more successful at this part of their lives. So I think that's a really important part that you can learn about this earlier in life. And the comments about role models and read some of the things that some of the people that he talked to, some of the lessons he learned were pretty powerful. So those were mine. Joe, what about yourself?
First of all, it's a great book. It really does put things in very practical, accessible terms, but there's a lot of weight behind the points that he makes in terms of some of the research too. Four things jumped out to me. First, he talked about being clear about how you'll spend your time in retirement. And he talked about some people will often make sweeping statements. I'd like to travel more. I want to spend more time with my grandchildren. But he advises being very specific about how and what you want to do. And I thought that was really helpful and a very useful thing to keep in mind. Secondly, all the conversation about habits. That's a particular interest of mine. And I really found what he said about habits protect us, jumped off the page. And also that you've got to really keep in mind being open to new and variety and work at that. And if you get those things working in tandem, it's going to be much, much better than either or. And then he talked about physical balance as well. The need to really work on making sure you're balanced. That's something, as you know, I was injured 2 years ago, half a mile to go in a marathon. And I've had to learn the hard way to regain that balance and doing those same exercises that he talked about. Wise investment, because the amount of people that fall each year is staggering. And the economic costs in terms of medical costs, productivity, et cetera, are really enormous. So a good practice to start early, because it's one of those things that changes, but you can influence it. Now my final point. I was struck by his comments about walking and the benefits, not only in terms of helping your physical health, but also cognitive health. It's something that we can almost all do, and it's free, and you can do it in a social aspect. It's something that's a much bigger part of my life than it was 2 years ago, but I thought he made some great points about that practice.
So do we walk before we eat the charcoal ice cream or after?
Well, both. ideally, both. But what got me that day, what made me think of it was, I saw very vividly how I was not open to that thing being new and how open our son Matt is. And it was memorable for that reason, as he said. But a good lesson.
Absolutely.
I'm glad I tried it.
We hope you enjoyed today's retirement conversation with Alan Castell. As retirement coaches, we at Retirement Wisdom help people think through their transition into retirement. We also help those that are in the early part of retirement, but are looking for more from this stage of their lives. To find out more about us and how we can help you, you can schedule a free, no-obligation consultation with Joe or me. Simply go to retirementwisdom.com, and on the top left corner, click on Get a Free Consultation. That's it. We will welcome the opportunity to speak with you. Thanks for joining the Retirement Conversation podcast today. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com. Thanks for listening. Till next time.